Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Welcome back to the Luke and the Pete Show. I am the Pete part of the Luke and Pete Show. I'm joined by the Luke part of the Luke and Pete Show, and he sounds like this.
Good day.
Good day, everyone. There's a video game journalist I listen to quite a lot by virtue of the fact she just does a lot of work, and I quite like the company she works for. And she has a really quite well rounded kind of like fancy accent, like a fancy kind of London accent. Her diction is excellent. She speaks very well. But then I heard her on a podcast recently, and she just switched like that into the broadest Geordie accent I've ever heard in my life. It was amazing.
Wow.
I was like, how have you managed to disguise a Geordie accent so well? And it's something that I find myself doing in the South, because you just literally can't get a lot of stuff done talking
Pete,
with the Hartlepool accent.
Did you, and obviously I'm well versed in listening to you, so I can probably understand you really easily now, but do you think that if someone said to you, you've got to do an episode of a show and they were going to get someone to listen to it and they can't be able to tell whether you're from the South or not, do you reckon you could do it?
No, I don't think I could. That's why I think it's incredible.
I don't think you could either, because you can only say there's nothing wrong with that and sound like a Southerner.
There's nothing wrong with it.
Yeah. Do you reckon your accent softened though? It must have done, right?
By kind of hook or by crook. I think just by living in London, people find it occasionally hard to understand what you're saying. And especially non-native English speakers as well. If English is a second language, you kind of have to meet people halfway sometimes. So you do find yourself kind of modifying your accent a little bit. But then when I'm back on, when I used to do like a show on Absolute, I used to not ham it up a little bit, but I used to return to how I would probably speak in Hartlepool, because it's a slightly friendlier accent, I would say.
It absolutely does my head in when people have radio voices, like whether it's their native accent or what, it's just so annoying.
But no, but like I think you're on, I think, more than anything else. So you relax into like an accent you use every day because you're forced into a particular accent. But I think when you're speaking to nobody, I think there's a mixture of feeling very comfortable and also accentuating a bit of yourself a little bit more and feeling like you have to give a little bit more of yourself.
Yeah, I know what you mean. I understand that. You've got
like a reading voice. When you have to read something, I could definitely tell when you're reading something simply because you kind of enunciate and your accent changes a little bit.
Yeah, because when I first started out doing this, I've had no training at all. And if I listen back to myself like 10 years ago, my God, it sounds so bad. But now...
I always sounded very depressed.
Oh, really? It's funny how our own perception of ourselves changes, because I feel now that I have to concentrate to not speak too fast, particularly if I'm trying to make a point I'm passionate about, because I'm naturally a very fast speaker. And I don't know if people, as you say, particularly people who don't have English as a first language, would even be able to understand me. And when I listen, it's quite interesting when we work on other podcasts or we develop new podcasts. Like when I did stuff with the Revisiting Girls, like Laura Kirk and that particularly, who people would have heard on this show, she had never done any broadcasting before, but her voice is absolutely brilliant. Like from she's just naturally very, very talented at broadcasting. Her voice, her diction, her elocution is amazing. And it kind of depressed me a little bit, because it took me about 8 or 9 years to do anything that people could even understand. And she comes out with this perfectly formed like way of like speaking. So it does vary from person to person. But I rally against this radio voice type thing is purely because when I was at university and I did media and there were a lot of local radio types on my course, they were just all gatekeeping weirdos about local radio, and they always spoke completely differently on air than they did off air. And they were just, to be honest, they were just twats, and it really put me off it. And I thought, and what it made me think was, there is no future for me in this industry because I can't do that, and I don't ever want to do that. And so it was really annoying. And so I think I've probably got a bit of prejudice from that. And I understand that most people in radio and local radio are great and really lovely, but at that point I had a bit of a chip on my shoulder about it.
Well, if you look at like television and certainly radio like 20, 25 years ago, it was all either people speaking in that weird kind of COD transatlantic kind of, hey, how's it going, guys?
Splitting.
Kind of, splitting the hairs there, talking like that.
Dave Clifton.
Or, yeah, you're Dave Clifton's, or you're Smashing Nice and stuff like that. Or just massive RP on Radio 4. And then you look at, and then regional voices started coming in, your Lauren Laverne's and stuff like that. And I was when I was watching Gogglebox, Celebrity Gogglebox over the weekend, Rylan was on. Now, that's an accent you, as a presenter, he's probably one of the first presenters who has that kind of accent.
The Essex, a real broad Essex
Russell
one.
Brand, kind of like Estuary, kind of those kind of accents where you just never heard them before. People like Russell, I think Russell Brand and him are the only two people who, certainly on the male side of things, are allowed to kind of be presenters but talk like that, if that makes any sense.
I wouldn't even put Russell Brand in that category purely because he's so idiosyncratic that I don't think there's much. I don't think many people would, unless they took a real interest, would even know he's from Essex. But Rylan, absolutely. And that is obviously a symptom of everyone being introduced to those wildly popular The Only Way is Essex type shows where you see a whole generation of those people who come through to prominence through those reality shows. And I find that really interesting, actually, because the Only Way is Essex, I'm not overly familiar with it, but a lot of my friends watch it and I kind of know a little bit about it. And the reason that's interesting to me is because I might be wrong on this, and people will get in touch if I am, and I'm sure there are people out there who know a lot more about it than me. But what it seems like it is to me is that we have a whole load of snobbery about that show and about those people on it, because they are the first generation of people who've come up through a background of their parents being self-made wealthy people, right? So they've moved,
Who moved out from the East End.
Yeah, they've made their money in London, they've moved to Essex, and they've made so much money that their children effectively haven't had to work traditional jobs. So it's actually no different at all to the aristocracy. But because it's seen as nouveau riche, in quotes, and because it's seen as being a little bit common, people are a lot more prejudiced about it. And I find that a really interesting insight into the British mentality. Do you understand what I mean?
Yeah, yeah, hugely. But you see that sort of everywhere. You saw that when I've got that myself. If I hear like somebody from Newcastle who's got a very posh accent, they live out in the, you know, sticks, and they've never had to adopt like a really rich kind of Geordie twang, I always sort of feel a bit like, oh, you're not a real Newcastle supporter or something.
Right. Okay,
When I'm not even from bloody Newcastle, I live down the road, you know. And my accent, every time I listen back to like a football ramble or something I'm on, I sort of go, God, my accent is so, it's changed so much since I left the North East. It really has. For reasons outside my control, but also reasons very much inside my control, being understood, one of them.
Because of some of the things that you've done, you have to try and disguise yourself from them.
Yeah, exactly. That's why I've got a false nose on.
The Only Way is Essex point I was just making there, and the class system in the UK is fascinating to me in a way, because obviously my in-laws are all American, and I've got a very large American American family now, which I've inherited, which is amazing, and I find it fascinating and really rewarding and enriching to learn about different cultures, which people will snigger at because they go, well, it's only American, but actually American culture is very, very different to British culture if you get inside it. And the one thing that's fascinating to me and that they find, in my experience, they find very interesting is the British class system, because there's just not really any class system at all in that way in the US. Now, there are clearly very, very difficult situations socially in the US, which are defined, you know, largely across things like race and that kind of thing. But in terms of an old-fashioned class system, they just don't have it. And it's not on their radar.
I mean, they They do, but they're not cognizant of it because they seem to think, because it's all built into, you know, the American dream, the capitalist, you know, a capitalist construct effectively of it, people, you know, working themselves out of poverty, which, you know, by and large doesn't necessarily happen. So people don't in America resent wealth like we do.
Yeah, absolutely. That's absolutely gifted. True. Speaking of wealth, have you seen the news story that broke the other day? I love this. I don't know anything about it really, but it's absolutely brilliant to me because he's a character that I find endlessly fascinating. And I know you do too. But did you see that Elon Musk wiped $14 billion off Tesla's share price, off their value, total value, with one tweet? He tweeted right, the other day, just simply saying, Tesla stock price too high, in my opinion. $14 billion came off it.
Well, I'm fairly certain. I mean, he's going to. Well, he might get in trouble. He might not get in trouble. He seems to get away with a lot. I mean, that accusation of minor.
I didn't see too much about that, but I was really surprised. I mean, based on the very very threadbare news I saw of it, admittedly, it was very surprised when that came out.
Yeah, I said minor paedophile guy. I mean, a man who was accused of being a paedophile by the billionaire. Is he a billionaire? Certainly a very rich man. Yeah. Elon Musk. He managed to call a man with no proof a sex offender and then somehow get away with it. Now, I'm no legal expert, but how the minor, I think he's from the Northeast actually, how that man managed, I don't know who represented him, but it must have been some kind of Better Call Saul kind of situation. How he managed to lose that case, I do not know. Incredible. Incredible.
Elon Musk is worth $40 billion, by the way. $40 billion.
Jesus Christ.
It's not even narrow. He's a massive.
Lend Kanye a couple, will you?
Saying that is an insult to Kanye West.
But he's been told before, I think, he's not allowed to tweet or speak in any public forum about the share price or about
You think that would be a no-brainer. Right? That's why it's surprising.
Without speaking to shareholders first. And yeah, I don't really know enough about money or finance or the markets. Obviously, I don't. But I think he might actually get into trouble for doing that. He's definitely not allowed to do that.
No, I think he might be in the top 10 wealthiest people in the world, Musk. He's got to be up there. It's certainly top 20.
And he is worshipped by some of the strangest men I know. I think it's
and that sounds something. This people listening, imagine,
I know, right?
you listen to Pete, imagine the strangest people that Pete knows. That's the thing. But that's a mind-blowing statement, that.
Yeah, when I get together with the weirdest people I know, we sort of sit around an old wooden table, Knights of the Round Table kind of situation. We talk about
some of my dressed as medieval knights.
Exactly, yeah. And then we go out and do some cosplay
as a witcher. Pete, you know what we should do? That's a great idea for a podcast series, right? So you are the strangest person I know. You've described yourself as a pathologically strange man. We should we should call it the strange quest. And you basically tell us the strangest person you know. We go and find them. Then they tell us the strangest person they know. And I reckon we come all the way back round to normal again. Eight episodes. Spotify exclusive. They'll take it.
Second episode, it would just go racist.
Yeah, it would. It would, to be fair. Yeah, that's a shame.
It'd be very anti-Semitic almost immediately.
Yeah.
Not that I hang out with any anti-Semites.
No, well, 6 degrees of separation.
Not that I know of.
Yeah. Another story
I'm
that
I... Labour Party, I guess.
Stop it. Another story I found that broke on the same day as Elon Musk... having another meltdown and Pete, this is as a former employee of a zoo yourself, this is going to hit home to you, so just sit down, steel yourself for this. A number of zoos apparently around the world are reporting that their animals are becoming lonely because of a lack of visitors.
Oh no.
So apparently and I'll tell you that the killer, absolute awful statement, quote, I'll save for the end. So steel yourself for that. There's a load of zoos that have, obviously, regular feeding times, like a meet the public type feeding time where they, you know, and we can have a debate.
They expect to see people.
Yeah. And so they come out at a certain time of the day and they expect to be fed and see people and they don't. And it's really upsetting for them. I know zoos have some questions to answer around ethics and stuff, but I'm not proposing we get into that now. But a couple of zookeepers and zoologists are saying that, you know, they're used to visitors. They always come up and have a look, and they like to interact. And particularly giraffes have found it very difficult in a certain wildlife park in New Zealand. But the worst part of this story was a zoologist from Dublin Zoo simply said, "The animals are wondering what's happened to everyone." Isn't that really sad?
I think that's a very definition of the unreliable narrator, I would say, in any story. A zookeeper who's watching the animals and wondering what's happening. Yeah, how does he know? Does he know?
But there's a particular bird called a minor bird that I think famously mimics noises that it hears, and it's been proven or shown to mimic chainsaws and all sorts. And it's been shown as a bit, I think in the past, it's been held up as a kind of symbol in the fight against deforestation, because certain minor birds will obviously mimic other birds' calls traditionally, but they've been witnessed mimicking chainsaws and car engines because of the deforestation. But anyway, they're very social birds. And Dinah the Miner in Phoenix Zoo has been very,
steady,
very upset.
Elon, steady.
And apparently they're having to come up with solutions to curb loneliness in some of these animals, because it's very, very difficult for their mental state, which of course can affect their physical health. So it's a really sad and probably unpredicted aspect of lockdown all over the world. This is happening to animals. So very, very sad.
Well, two things there. There is a unlovable bar in Kobe in Japan that has live penguins in a little tank.
Don't go there. Don't give them money.
Don't go there. Well, it was called Happy Feet, and I thought, oh, that's a cute name for a bar. Oh, my God.
Is that why you only stayed there for 8 hours?
Well, the best thing, well, I think I'd preface every story with, I've probably told you about this on the podcast before, but a particularly, I'm not going to say arrogant, but certainly full of himself chap that I went out there with. He walked into the bar and just did like a big circle of the bar, looking around what's going on, pressing things, touching things, completely missed the fact that there were live penguins like basically just cavorting around behind where he was sitting. It was very, very enjoyable. But also, what was my other point? It was about the animals, wasn't it? GIF that somebody sent around this morning of a monkey trying to steal a child.
Yeah, that was chilling.
Right. I saw that in the morning. I thought, right, it's just a little family, they're just a family hanging out. And then a little monkey runs into frame, just grabs a toddler. And a couple of them go, ha-ha, he's trying to grab the toddler. And then the monkey really goes to grab this, kidnap this toddler, basically. What I missed from that scene was that the monkey rode in on a fucking motorbike.
Yeah. There's so many questions.
Incredible. So many questions. You could write a book on that.
The thing was, Pete, it was, and people who haven't seen this, we'll try and share it on Twitter, but it was probably, I would say, a small monkey, like a macaque or something, right?
Yeah.
And it was on a monkey-sized motorbike. It wasn't on a massive motorbike that it's learned how to ride. It was specifically built for the size of animal that was riding it. Where's that? Where are they making monkey-sized motorbikes specifically for monkeys?
Oh, it was very angular, though. Could have been one of Elon Musk's. That's all I'm saying.
How can it? It might get its tail caught in their chain.
It's a good point, actually.
Be careful.
Got to be careful, guys.
I think the toddler was fine. It was a bit shaken up, but it was fine.
I'm sure it's fine. But just an incredible scene I never thought I'd see, quite frankly.
I don't think any of us did.
No.
But, I mean, they are, in certain parts of the world, they're full on, aren't they, monkeys? I mean, there's that Carl Pilkington episode
very aggressive,
where he gets all his food stolen, and they just...
I remember being in Malaysia and having a banana in the back pocket of my jeans and a monkey coming off and stealing it. And to be honest, in the grand scheme of things, that's monkey 101, isn't it? That is, they love bananas, so I shouldn't have had it in my back pocket.
But the thing, Carl Pilkington did one where he went in quite an adorable way. He went into this little place in India, I think it was, or Thailand or whatever, and he's like, I'm going to feed these monkeys because they're wild and they like being fed. And he had the best intentions, and he went in there with a packet of Monster Munch. I mean, don't feed monkeys Monster Munch, but I mean, I'm sure they eat all sorts of stuff.
Why is he exporting Monster Munch, for crying out loud?
But he opens a packet of Monster Munch. I think he's preparing to take a crisp out and feed them one by one. Within about 3 seconds, the monkey's stolen the packet and another monkey's stolen the second packet. He's got in his pocket. And that's it. That's the end of it. They saw him coming, quite literally.
I've told you before, when Steve-O came into XFM, all he had in his bag was Red Bull and Monster Munch. Incredible.
Steve-O from Jackass.
Steve-O from Jackass.
Or as my friend repeatedly calls it, annoyingly, Jackass. It's not Jackass, is it?
It's the name of the title. It's the title. You've got to go with it.
Let's have a little break, Pete. When we come back, I've got a couple more tweets to round up, and then we'll do some emails, mate.
All right.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Treat mom to healthy, glowing skin with Osea's limited edition skincare sets. Osea has been making clean, seaweed-infused products for nearly 30 years. Their Golden Glow body set includes 3 clinically proven bestsellers for smooth, glowing skin, while the Glow and Go facial set provides spa-level results at home. Both sets come in giftable boxes with savings up to $48 and free shipping for a limited time. For 10% off your first order site-wide, go to oseamalibu.com and use code MOM.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces 3 thought-provoking questions over 3 glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came, and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it, and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would think of that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Hannah Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.
We could call it Pete and Mark's Colossal Tussle.
But we didn't. We called it Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
A celebration of all things WrestleMania and beyond. And you may be thinking, I'm not really into wrestling. Well, don't worry. There's something for everyone. To be honest, it's mainly about stuff like this.
So hang on. Easy Lover was the original theme on WrestleMania.
It was. Someone heard it on the radio and went, that sums up everything about WrestleMania to me.
And this.
You can really see the old back acne on test.
Yes.
And this.
Is it worth reminding people of what earthquake John Tenta looked like at 23 years old?
Yeah, I think so.
And this.
For the record, Marty has made it very clear, and I agree and believe him, that he has never, A, had sex with his daughter, or B, wanted to have sex with his daughter.
And the people behind the face paint doing the most unique job in the entire world. Get it wherever you get your podcasts. That's Wrestle Me.
Wrestle Me, Mark.
Wrestle Me, Pete.
And we're back with a little Pete show. I've still not told Luke about the floating hotel. The hotel.
What's that?
Hey Gum Gang. We'll get to it next week. I promised it last week, but I'll do it next week.
I forgot about that.
That's all right. I told you to remind me, but why should it be your problem?
No, I've got my own stuff to remember. Peter, we got
an email.
I've got a tweet first.
All right, cool.
We got a tweet from Word SOS on Twitter. I don't know their real name. But they say, if you woke up and Luke was Pete and Pete was Luke, what would you both do? Obviously, no one believes you in this situation. Only the two of you know. What would you do?
Right, hang on. You need to run that by me again. Sorry.
So like it's like a body swap comedy type thing. You wake up and you're okay. Me and I wake up and I'm you and no one knows apart from us and no one believes us.
I mean, I'd have to get better at, organisation, cooking, running. You've not gone for a run for a while there, Luke. You know, I'd love to be tall, though. Oh, I'd be brilliant, that. I'd just be walking around the streets going, I did fuck the social distancing. I'd be like, look how tall I am, everybody. I can see over this hedge.
I'd probably spend a lot of time looking at my own tattoos. And I'd also...
You've got one as well. So we're both inked.
I'd be looking forward. That's the thing. So I don't really like Chinese food, but I think I'd have to get involved with it to show you.
You'd have MSG. You'd have terrible MSG come down. So you'd have to maintain a level of monosodium glutamate.
Terrible something come down, Peter. Mm.
You wouldn't know any of my passwords.
Also, but if I wake up and I'm you, do I wake up in my own house, but I'm you, or do I wake up and I'm you in your house?
I'd wake up in your house.
That is chilling. I don't want to talk about that.
You can write your own stories, but the ramifications, very different situations. I live alone. Thanks for your email.
One more tweet from Brian who says, sadly, my grandfather passed away recently, but upon beginning sorting through his belongings, we discovered some incredible items. He had two national awards for decoding Morse code, and he appears to have been a spy or some kind of operative in Africa at some point. He also had shares in a number of big companies. We knew none of this, and neither did his wife, my grandmother. What are the discoveries others have made about someone they thought they knew? We're not going to answer that, because that could get a bit depressing, but that is a fascinating story.
Well, that's the thing. This generation, we do a podcast every week. There is nothing... You guys who are listening right now know everything about me. There's nothing off the table. I've spoken about everything. It's just one of those things. Like you will know everything about me. So we're so kind of used to sharing and oversharing and being, you'd probably say slightly conceited about how we present that information. So like men and women back in the day just had secrets and they took them to the grave and they never spoke about them because they just either didn't think they were interesting or they just thought it was the right thing to do. So, yeah, nowadays it would be, a five-part podcast series or Instagram page.
I mean, that is a large part of the reason why the male suicide rate is through the roof.
But yes,
absolutely what you're saying is completely correct. Like there's a generation of, a whole generation of particularly men, more than one generation for years and years who never really spoke about anything. I know people now who I find fascinating and have had amazing lives, but they don't really spend too much time talking about it. And you and I are the opposite to that. We've not had interesting lives and we never shut up.
Exactly. Well, veterans always say that they'll only ever speak about what went on, during their work abroad, let's say, or even at home with other veterans because they just don't feel comfortable talking about it with anyone who hadn't experienced similar situations. And
But those people are no good to us. They're not going to email us, are they?
No, they're probably not, to be honest, no.
They're not going to help us win the ratings war, are they?
Oh, is there a war? Oh, God. Are we ratings veterans?
Yeah. Hello at lukeandpeteshow.com is the email address to get in touch. I mean, for every man who sits there not speaking about his problems, you have a man like James, who we heard about on Monday, who sent us a four-paragraph email about Nike tennis socks. And they're the kind of people we like. So do keep your emails coming in. I've got an email here from just deciding which one to do. I'm going to do this one from Nathan, who says, hi guys, was listening to a recent episode where Luke mentioned proposing to his wife at the top of the Old Man of Store in Skye. I enjoyed the story because it was far more successful than the journey I had to the same place. Last winter, I drove the North Coast 500 in a camper van on my own. And that's the big road that goes all the way around the top of Scotland, for those who don't know. And on the way back down, I visited Skye. After climbing the little mountain... rude to see store
little mountain,
I got back to the van and it had broken down. Now I want to put in perspective for those who haven't visited that part of the world what that means. What that actually means is you are completely fucked because unless someone else comes along, so the Old Man of Stor, which is an amazing place on an amazing island, they're very understated, or they certainly have been traditionally, about their sightseeing bits, in particularly on Sky. There is nothing other than just a wooden sign saying the Old Man of Stor and an arrow. There's no gift shop. There's no car park. There's no nothing to let you know beyond a sign. To the point of, if that sign blew away or got pulled down, I don't know how many people would be able to find it. So the point is, he's not broken down in the car park of some national park in, you know, in the Lake District or whatever.
And he can just get back on the road.
Yeah, no. I mean, the Old Man of Stor, I think, is about a 15-minute drive away from Portree, which is the biggest town on Skye and isn't very big. And that itself is about an hour away from the mainland, probably. Anyway.
Yeah.
He said, yeah, so I broke down. No problem, I thought. I'll call my breakdown people. And they put me through to my hometown branch of my bank because my breakdown insurance came through my bank. My hometown branch is on the Isle of Wight. After explaining my situation to the lady on the phone, she proceeded to piss herself laughing that I was 800 miles away from home and up shit creek. In overall, it took 2 weeks for my van to be towed all the way back from the Scottish Highlands to back to the Isle of Wight.
I mean, I'm hoping that he managed to escape that particular situation himself. Like, he wasn't still in the van when they found him 2 weeks later.
He's just sending him an email to us via satellite phone.
Yeah, I'm worried.
I wonder what had a lot of stops in it. I got back in 2 weeks' time. Stop. I'm okay. Stop.
Oh, mate, that sounds bloody dreadful. But what if you needed your van in 2 weeks? Like, what a terrible service.
I think that, he hasn't named the company, so we can't shame them. I think it is interesting because, of course, in the UK, it's very small and you're not really that far away from anywhere. But up in the Highlands, there are signs that when you sort of drive into a certain part of the Highlands, it will say, get your fuel now, last chance to get petrol for like 100 miles or whatever.
Right.
And I think if you went at a certain time of the year and you made some poor decisions, it could go wrong pretty quickly. I mean, I think a couple of people might have sadly passed away on Ben Nevis maybe a year or two ago because the weather can close in very quickly. And if you've not got the right precautions, you're in big trouble. So it can go wrong. And that's part of the reason people like to go there, right? Because it's so remote and so beautiful. But of course, with that comes the danger.
You might find yourself camping in a bothy. I do find bothies fascinating.
Yeah, they're lovely.
The floor.
Sometimes, like when you're in Scotland, I know I bore on about this, but I do love it. There's a place, I think it might be in Glencoe, which isn't actually that remote, but it's beautiful. And you can do a walk through there, maybe through a bit of a valley. And at one point, I think I took a photo of it. There's just a house. And I'm not being funny. I can't exaggerate to you enough how isolated it is. It's just one building, tiny. And someone obviously lives there because there's like a car outside and there's a washing on the line. It's the same in Iceland, by the way. Iceland's like that. You'll just drive through what looks like Mars and you'll just see a house.
Listen, you're talking to a guy who announces several TV shows on D-Max all about being off-grid.
Ice Road Truckers.
In Alaska. Ice Road Truckers have a job to do, but these people live off-grid in homesteads and they've got to move their toilets because it's flooding. Where every time spring comes, the flood comes. I've spoken about it before, but my God, why people live in such remote locations. They must really hate people.
But it's the ultimate idea, isn't it? It's the ultimate thing where the idea of it is probably so much better than the reality of it because when reality sets in, you need to drive 15 minutes minimum to just get a pint of milk.
It's just, I'm looking at the things around me. A SanDisk Ultra SD card, a little thingy of Sudafed. Where am I going to get my Sudafed? Where am I going to get my pseudoephedrine? I'm addicted like Donald Trump.
You and Donald Trump keeping Sudafed in business.
Well, he does European strength, so he knows what's what.
I find that fascinating. The European strength is stronger than the American because I thought that the Europeans were much more regulated on that kind of thing.
I think the US are more regulated because you can make crank out of it. I don't think we make
that's right,
crank.
Yeah. There's some really interesting socio-economic reasons as to why methamphetamine's never really taken off in Europe. I don't know what they are, but I read about it before and I've forgotten all of them, but it was fascinating at the time.
Big in North Korea, apparently.
Oh, but mate, I mean, come on. That's why one of the things this kind of pseudo appreciation because of the banter in quotes of Kim Jong-un, I find horrendous. As someone who's, I'm a layman, but I've read a couple of books about North Korea. I find that hugely distasteful.
Yeah, he's very, but you'd probably say like memefulness to a lesser degree. Putin, Trump. I mean, you know, anybody who is ridiculous in modern times. Who, I mean, it's an achievement that they've managed to run North Korea like they've managed to run them during the last, you know, the internet age. Effectively trying to run a closed country in such a time is.
But the key difference is Donald Trump was democratically elected as a leader. And so,
it's a completely different situation, though.
I guess what I'm getting to, Pete, which is basically that I don't think that enough people, particularly in the West, know anywhere near enough about that regime. And if they did, they probably wouldn't be quite so quick to laugh about it as they are.
Why isn't we could talk about Xi Jinping and, you know, the imprisonment of the Muslims and stuff, and why isn't, you know, the Arab world shocked and talking about that all the time? It's a weird time. Everything's moving very, very quickly, and it seems that money is very much the thing that talks.
And before we disappear up our own arseholes, and before we finish the show, can I just please say that I'm really very much enjoying The Witcher 3 Wild Hunt now. I've kind of got with it.
Oh, good. You've kind of broken through a little bit. It's a bit wordy at times, but it's a very enjoyable, characterful, Lord of the Ringsy kind of experience.
I think what it does really well as a game is it, and I know I'm a basic bitch on this, but stay with me. What it does really well is it kind of makes you learn the ropes. So there's loads of things you can't do until you get to a certain level. And initially that's quite frustrating. But as you slowly get through it and you get up the levels, it becomes more and more interesting and more rewarding. And I think what I needed was just a bit of patience. And because I was playing it on a Switch Lite, which is quite a bit smaller, I needed to immerse myself in it by putting headphones in, maybe dimming the lights a bit to get into the world. Mm. And I've found it tremendously rewarding ever since. I'm really enjoying it.
Are you enjoying hanging out? I can't remember the name of the horse. What's the name of the horse?
Roach.
Roach. Are you enjoying?
But the thing that gut punched me was that I love Roach. He's a great horse, and obviously Geralt relies on him a great deal. He's just a great horse, and you can put a good saddle on him and put little trophies on him and stuff. But then I found out halfway through, spoiler alert, if you don't want to know spoilers about The Witcher, then don't listen to this bit.
By saying spoiler alert, we know exactly what happens.
No, Geralt, it's not. It's much more complicated than that. It turns out that Geralt apparently goes through horses like nobody's business and just calls every single one of them Roach.
Like James Bond.
So he doesn't get attached to them.
No.
Yeah, sad. Very sad. I'm very sad to hear that. It cut against my sensibilities.
You're my Roach.
Oh, thanks, mate. You can ride me all day long.
I'm a professional sidekick, after all.
Yeah, you are. Mm. That's not my doing. That's your own doing. I feel like I'm the sidekick to you on this show, though. Anyway, let's get out of here. That's Luke and Pete's show done for another week. We will be, of course, back on Monday for more of this inanity. Thank you very much for sticking with us. We love having listeners. It's very kind of you to get in touch. And if you want to do so, hello@lukeandpeteshow.com. If you've got nothing to email about, drop us a review on iTunes, Apple Podcasts, wherever you get your pods. Pete's just snapped his femur.
That was me dropping a review / my Sudafed.
Very, very nice. And you can follow us on Twitter at Luke and Pete Show as well. Have a lovely weekend. Stick together. Enjoy whatever stuff you can get up to at home. Maybe watch The Last Dance on Netflix. Very, very good. I'm not the first person to recommend that, but it's a fantastic series. Give that a go. Let us know what you think. Thank you very much, Pete Donaldson.
Goodbye, everyone.
That's goodbye from me as well.
This was a Stakhanov production.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Kate Thornton. Join me every week on White Wine Question Time, the podcast that asks famous faces three thought-provoking questions over three glasses of wine.
It's very rare to be introduced with such a thorough introduction, and it's kind of lovely to listen to all that and go, yeah, I've had a good life, right?
You really have.
How did you find that? I can't even remember.
Yeah, you do your research, Kate, man. I'll tell you that.
Do you know what? You are the only person ever, no other journalist has ever made that connection.
Wow, what a great question.
And receives some truly memorable answers.
And Tom Cruise came and Nicole Kidman. I go to him, listen, before you go, Tom, I just want you to know, if you fancy a foursome, I'm up for it and I know Anne-Marie doesn't mind.
When I first dated my now husband, I joined a gym for, I'm going to say, £1,000 a year, just so I could go off and have a poo.
Actually, I got heckled once in Wales, and there was a bloke at the bar on crutches, and he actually said to me, I'd rather fall over than listen to this shit, and he threw his crutches at me and fell over. Can you believe that?
I've got some cat's ashes, I don't know who they are.
You've been catfished by your own cat.
Exactly, seriously, man.
Dad, have you thought about putting in a breakfast nook? And my dad would say something like that. Have you thought about getting your own fucking house?
How did you give a duck an orgasm, Craig?
It's good with them, you know. I know my way around a duck.
So, if you fancy a sit-down with the likes of Adam Hills, Tom Allen, Anna Waddingham, Phil Tufnell, James Acaster and Ed Gamble, Daisy May Cooper, and tons more, then join me every Tuesday and Friday. Search White Wine Question Time in your podcast app to subscribe and listen now. White Wine Question Time is a Stack production.